You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for January 10th, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Chris Christie Implausible Deniability Tour, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal. Chris Christie won't see him no more, and there wasn't nothing nobody could do about it.
My favorite tweet of the morning was, with 0% of the precincts in, New Jersey goes to Hillary Clinton.
As I mentioned to you, it just wasn't a press conference without Andrew Breitbart getting up and grabbing the microphone.
I've got to show you this dick pic on my phone.
For the kids.
For his family.
For his family.
Yeah.
So who is sadder this week, Chris Christie or Frank Luntz?
Oh, man.
That's a tough one.
You know who's happy this week?
Hillary Clinton?
You just got very, very happy. David Brooks.
David Brooks.
Somewhere he's sparking up a joint, just thanking almighty God that Chris Christie did this to take attention away from his, you know.
Him losing
colossal.
It?
Yeah. His
publicly in his column, yes.
A couple, three times. He really is just, you know, falling apart in print, which is entertaining, I suppose, from a distance. But, oh my good, when Jon Stewart goes full Driftglass on David Brooks.
Absolutely.
By
quoting David Brooks to put down David Brooks.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's, you know, some weird threshold has been crossed in elite blogging culture, you know, and versus mass culture that is something to behold. But I believe we were talking about Chris Christie, who knows
has a
nothing.
Sad. He has sad.
He knows nothing. He knows nothing. At the time we're recording this, David Wildstein is testifying in front of the New Jersey committee. And he's pleading the fifth over and over and over again, which is delightful. Nothing inspires national confidence like seeing another New Jersey thug in front of a committee pleading the fifth. You know, that just screams. And being as I hail from Chicago, it brings back fond memories, I must say.
I wonder if Chris Christie handpicked everyone that was at that press conference.
That's a good question.
Certainly seemed as though he did.
Yeah, that was a long press conference.
First name basis with all of them. And was very relaxed talking with them and joking and laughing. And he's back. And, it seemed like this was the press's problem as well. And you talked about that with me this morning.
Uh-huh.
That, you know, these guys want access to the governor.
They do.
And so, whatever he does is okay.
I have to kill the signal on the TV because Mark Halperin just popped up to explain Chris Christie to America.
Oh,
so
both sides.
I really don't want to see that. That's just hurting my eyes.
Both sides.
I want to go back to Chris Christie, and I want to just point out that, first of all, calling his aides Christie's Angels is my thing. Because apparently he communicated with them by speakerphone and never actually met them or knew what they were doing in any way, which is weird because what's fascinating to me is just like happened in Chicago, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, or with Rod Blagojevich. When you see an organization that cracks open, essentially a very secretive organization, how it's run is very opaque, crack open, and you see the massive dissonance between the public image they've tried really hard to cultivate and how the machine actually works. It's fascinating to watch because Christie's really stuck between two really unpleasant alternatives. And the people who have been talking about Chris Christie politics, the local media people and his opponents, to be fair, who I'm sure have an axe to grind, are very clear that Chris Christie runs a tight fucking ship. I've heard his opponent in the last gubernatorial race describe him a couple of times as a paramilitary organization. Top down, I know what's going on. I know what's going on in great detail. My lieutenants report to me. They're all handpicked by me. These are friends. These are fixers. These are my, you know, goombas from back in the neighborhood. And suddenly he's got to come out and say, I knew nothing about what was going on.
Yeah, and they all lied to me.
They all lied to me
and they're fired.
And shockingly, they all lied to me. And they all constructed this elaborate, dangerous, vast revenge plot for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they executed it. across many days, afflicting millions of people, and laughed about it in email, all for no reason. There was no reason to do it at all. It was completely whimsical. They just rolled out of bed and thought they would just do this at random. Mm-hmm. And then they constructed an elaborate series of lies to cover up their elaborate plot, which has now all fallen apart.
And I'm a good leader.
I'm a good leader.
I quickly fired them and did some soul searching. Therefore,
24 hours after the story broke
on my iPad
days ago,
in my bedroom.
Yeah, 100 days ago the story broke, but now it's real because someone else confirmed it, and 100 days too late, I leapt into action. This is the former state's attorney.
Yeah.
Who
he's
would
got
have
lots of corruption experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how he made his career. It was getting corrupt politicians and
yeah. And these people would have been roasting on a spit by now if the governor had been a Democrat, mm-hmm. and Chris Christie were the attorney general, but he is stuck. And for those of us who are again from Illinois /Chicago.
What we need to talk about, I guess, first is We've both been saying, this wouldn't have happened. This wouldn't have fallen this way. The tree would not have fallen this way in Chicago.
In Chicago. No. Well, it sort of did in Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
Because Rod Blagojevich is in jail.
Yeah.
He has a federal prison number and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But Rod Blagojevich broke the
He's the anomaly because he didn't do it the daily way.
The previous governor is also in jail.
Yeah.
So we've got two governors.
Four governors in jail total.
So we're number one. We have our chief export is scandal about our politicians. But Rod Blagojevich is in prison for the following reason. He couldn't keep his fucking mouth shut.
Yeah.
He couldn't shut up. He talked openly and bluntly, even when he knew he was being wiretapped, about stuff that every sentient mammal in Chicago knows you never fucking talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. Being stupid about this is, fixing things, avenging yourself on your political enemies, tossing favors to your friends is not exactly new in politics.
Mm-hmm.
What is the lesson that everyone in Chicago knows is you don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't talk about it for lots of reasons. But the number one reason is because you still have to live there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the example that I would cite, people were saying, is this Chris Christie's sister Christian moment? Sister, that was Alex Perrine. His sister soldier moment? Is it his Benghazi? Is it his
IRS scandal?
Is it his Falkland Islands? Is it his acorn?
Wait.
Is it his acorn? And I prefer to think of it as his Al Sanchez moment, because Al Sanchez. I'm gonna tell you a little story about Chicago. It'll take about 3 minutes, so it'll probably take a half an hour. But I'll tell you up front. It'll take 3 minutes.
Timer for 3 minutes.
Go to ahead. Suck you in. So once upon a time, a long time ago, winter of 2000 or so, I think 2000 or 2001. The mayor, because there really is only one mayor of Chicago. There's this guy named Rahm Emanuel, who's technically the mayor, but there's only one mayor. Everyone knows that. His honor, Richard Daley. So Richie Daley appointed his very good friend, Al Sanchez, to run the streets and sanitation department. Al Sanchez, at the time, was also effectively running the Hispanic Democratic Organization,
mm-hmm.
which was a massive clout-generating, jobs-handing-out engine for the Daley administration. It was a political machine that Daley needed to stay mayor and then keep his political will enforced. And Al Sanchez I don't think he was the actual head of it, but he was the effective head of it. He was the guy. So you put that guy in charge of your single largest city department, or one of the two or three largest city department. The people who control all the trucks, all the streets, all the sewers, all the electricity.
Shovel all the snow.
Can
make or break politicians in major northern cities.
Jane Byrne became mayor.
Yeah.
Because of a snowstorm and an incompetently handled blizzard.
Yep.
So there was a big snowstorm, and Al Sanchez came up with a genius idea of people should go out and move their cars. They should, move them from one side of the street to the other and then move them back, so the snowplows can get through, which is spectacularly stupid if you know anything about Chicagoans, Chicago streets, cars, the habit in Chicago of marking your territory where you personally have shoveled out your spot with lawn furniture and threatening bodily harm to anyone who comes and takes your spot. So this
and the fact that both sides of most streets in Chicago have parking on them.
Yeah. Well,
and you're not going to be able to move your car from one side of the street.
And after 2 inches of snow or whatever it is. So it was a ludicrous idea. Mm-hmm. And apparently the mayor sort of said that out loud in public. And it is my understanding, apocryphally perhaps, but it is my understanding that some of his closer aides pointed out to them that, you can't pretend you don't know the guy because you just appointed him and you've known him since you were 12 and you're political pals and you go way, way back. So this whole idea that I knew nothing, I have no idea who this guy is. He just showed up one day and decided to wreck the traffic in my fair city, ain't going to fly. So Daley, being very light on his feet about these things, immediately pivoted 180 degrees, put his arm around Al Sanchez and called him a genius. He's a genius. He's a great man. He's a great Streets and Sand guy. He's awesome. And his snow shoveling is unparalleled. And he's a great good man. And he's a great job. He's a great Streets and Sand commissioner. And we should all be grateful, blah, blah, blah. Right. So, you know, and you just assert those things because who's going to say otherwise? Some reporter in some paper? Screw those people. Mm-hmm. The people who count are the people who count votes. And they're the ones who Daley has in his pocket. So, you know, fuck them. Pardon my use of language, but I'm getting a little Chicago-y here. So, and there Al Sanchez remained until he had to go to jail. Because once upon a time, there was also a thing called the hired truck scandal, which you can all read about. Big, massive political scandal. And this is the Christie lesson.
Yeah, because this put people in jail.
You can read
about it. We're not going to get into it. No. But the hired truck scandal was huge.
The hired truck scandal was massive. And people in Chicago were talking about Richie Daley is going to be impeached and lose his job over it. That's how bad it was. It got to his inner circle. People he's known since high school. People he's trusted. People he's given lots of favors to. His fixers, you know, his confidants. Those people were suddenly swept up in an investigation. And Daley did, you know, what Daley did. He pulled a guy out of the police department who was squeaky clean, put that person between himself and his former colleagues and friends and confidants and pals, and said, I don't know nothing. Got any questions? Talk to Ron, my new chief of staff, Ron Huberman. Talk to him. I don't know nothing. I ain't seen nothing. Ain't nobody ever said nothing to me. I have no idea what's going on here. Deny, 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 deny. And, you know, he went back to being Al who? Al Sanchez? Never heard of the man, which was very funny. Al Sanchez went to jail for 2.5 years for this. But he could have been gone for 20, but went for 2.5. And Al Sanchez did what everybody in Chicago is taught to do at a certain level of government. He kept his mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
Go watch Goodfellas. You keep your mouth shut.
You do your 2.5 years in prison.
Exactly. You do it like a man.
Yeah.
You don't rat your friends out. You don't say nothing to nobody. And Al Sanchez did his time, didn't say nothing to nobody. And now Al Sanchez, guess what he's doing now, Blue Gal? Guess what he's doing?
I don't know.
He's running for office. He's running for – he announced that he's going to run
– In the city?
In Cook County.
Oh,
which
Lord.
Is essentially the
which
same.
Which is more corrupt.
Yeah.
If anyone can, and any place can be more corrupt than the city of Chicago,
yeah.
Cook County politics sends people to jail on a regular basis.
Well, and Toni Preckwinkle, who's the president of the board, I've met Toni several times. She is very impressive. She was a very impressive alderman. But yeah, Cook County, Crook County, as it's famously known, has a long history of political corruption and people disappearing in the night and nepotism and John Stroger.
The thing, though, with Christie. I want to get back to Christie for a minute.
Well, and the thing is, Al Sanchez is running for office, and he still has friends. And by the way, he's running for the chair that William Beavers is vacating because William Beavers now has to go to jail. That's the punchline. So now we have an opening. But Al Sanchez never said nothing about nobody. And so Al Sanchez is still viable because he still has friends, and he didn't rat them out. And that's the thing. Your friends, Chris Christie, talked about this shit in email. They put it in writing. They did the thing you're never supposed to do. You can't be stupid enough to do that. And that's the moment we're in now, where are your friends going to rat you out, or are they going to sit still, take it like a man, and go to jail or whatever?
Yeah.
And if so, in 2 or 3 years, they'll find some make work for them somewhere. They'll send them to some rehabilitation center somewhere. One of the Chicago institutions does very good work rehabilitating former convicts. is also a place through which passes many corrupt former politicians.
Yeah.
Who are found jobs someplace. To,
the administration
to
of such, yes.
You know, yeah. Building and construction, mm-hmm. and driving, consulting, you know, a little something to tide you over until we can find something more permanent for you.
But I want to talk about Chris Christie for a minute. I'm going to change the subject.
No, no, please.
The parallels between this and the lessons that Christie could learn from Chicago are great.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to look at this from the standpoint of the national media, too. First of all, I think Chris Christie did hand invite everybody at that press conference. It was way too friendly.
Yeah.
And it boiled down. The reason he was there for 2 hours was because he was joshing with his friends, you know, in the press who have access to him. And that's what he's doing. So it looked good, or he thought he was doing well. But, you know, the national media made Christie the sort of front runner in the Republican
constellation,
let me put it that way.
In the great white hope of the reasonable
Republicans. The great white hope of the totally not racist, crazy Republicans.
Yeah, the non-Tea Party Republicans.
Right. And with Sandy and him shaking Obama's hand and working with Obama, so to speak.
Uh-huh. Right.
And yelling at Republicans for stopping money from getting to Jersey.
Yep. Which promptly disappeared in some cases.
Well, that's my point. You know, he's great at demanding money and then making it disappear, apparently,
mm-hmm.
when actual individual citizens need it for their rebuilding process. But also, the fact that he was willing to be the guy who was the reasonable Republican candidate for Chuck Todd and Morning Joe.
Right,
and
Joe Scarborough.
Yep,
that's his constituency.
That's his constituency. They're heartbroken because they don't have now a viable horse race for 2016.
Well, they need someone to plug into the both sides narrative.
Right, exactly.
And he was the guy.
Going to be the one, and they kept saying that he's dynamic instead of saying he's stomping.
Right.
You know? And he's, you know, Eastern instead of corrupt.
Right.
And forceful instead of he throws temper tantrums on a regular basis. And to me, this whole bridge thing, all of the details of it don't matter. To me, personally, in terms of getting to the bottom of anything. Because
right.
Christie doesn't have the temperament to be a candidate for president, period.
Well, there were already people mapping out the whole, he should just ignore Iowa because that's never going to happen in the South. You start in New Hampshire, go to Pennsylvania, and, you know, his northern strategy, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something that media people, that pundits make up so they'll have something to talk about.
Yeah. Well,
and the idea that... Yeah. That they were going to, they're bereft now,
mm-hmm.
because they were willing to ignore so much nastiness just to cast him in the role they needed him to play.
Just so they can have a two-horse race. Yeah.
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 And so they can say, here's the reasonable portion of the Republican Party. Here are the people who, you know, those crazy fringe people aren't really the Republican Party.
Yeah.
This guy's the GOP. They needed someone to fill that role. And they were perfectly willing to slather as much makeup on Christie and his record as necessary to force him into that part.
But this is where I get depressed, Driftglass.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I've got reason to be kind of down today anyway, because we got a letter from the Medicaid people and we have to prove income, which is just going to take a week of finding papers and photocopying and everything. And it's into the bureaucracy again. If this was
down
the first time I had been down to the DHS office.
This were the seventh time. But it's, you know, we need even more information.
Yeah. So.
And by the way, we'll need some more information after that. So.
Yeah. And they're doing their job, and I understand that. But I wish they would just say, look, pay this amount and you'll have health insurance for the next 5 years if you pay this amount every month. Even if it's hard, even if it's a car payment instead, you know, even if we wind up having to drive the minivan for another 7 years.
Until it becomes the Flintstone Mobile and we're running through the floorboards.
Yeah. I mean, if that's what it takes. But one of the problems with Obamacare they're finding is, you know, freelancers who make some money some months and no money the next month are eligible for Medicaid 1 month and not the next.
And they churn in and out of the system.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's can't happen. I mean, that just can't happen to us. I just won't let it happen. So, and I'm going to be very frank with the guy down at DHS, the case manager, say, look, put me on the exchange and let me pay something so that it's our insurance.
And that's fine. Yeah, just
that's fine. But just do it.
Eliminate uncertainty from my life.
Right. Yeah. Right. But I'm sorry for that aside. But I'm also the thing that got me depressed earlier this week was when I saw Mitch McConnell holding Obamacare hostage over or attempting to.
Yeah.
Over for unemployment benefits. Like, let's just, you know, we'll do it if you delay Obamacare a year.
Yeah.
This is his job.
Right.
He's got all the money in the world.
His, yes, he does.
His wife's daddy died, and who's a Chinese import exporter, by the way. And, you know, he's quadrupled his income since he joined the Senate, and millions of dollars. And his job is to placate the Tea Party.
Right. Or else all that goes away.
Yeah. Well, his money doesn't go away.
No, but his power
goes away. That's inherited.
Right.
But what is so important? He can have all the power he wants. If he resigns, he can go. He'll still be called senator. He can hire a staff to call him senator, and he can go on Fox anytime he wants. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at Joe Lieberman. Excuse me. Look at Joe Lieberman.
Yeah.
He left the Senate. He's on Fox and Meet the Press and every place else anytime he wants to talk about let's go to war with Iran. Nobody stops him from going on.
No.
Newt Gingrich, who should be, you know, pushing a broom in Florida someplace and complaining about kids on his lawn.
Uh-huh.
And he's got a job with CNN. You don't lose power by leaving the Congress.
No.
You're just going to have all the power you want. Mitch McConnell, look at your choices. Look at your life.
Look at your life. Well, do you remember?
I want to get to this. Look at my life. Look at my choices. I'm spending time talking about Mitch McConnell.
Right.
You talk about pundits, you know, setting up horse races and so forth. Driftglass, I want to make the world a better place. That's why I want to do this podcast. I want to make things better. I want to change the world for the better.
Better for having been here.
Better for me having said something.
Right.
And I hope to use my voice and my whatever influence I have to help people communicate with their neighbors. And I'm spending time talking about Chris Christie and Mitch McConnell. And
exactly.
I don't like that. And I understand that elected officials have to have a certain personality type, which is egotistical and pushy and assertive and megalomaniacal. I'm not using the right word, but they're megalomaniacs.
Narcissistic, shall we say.
And very narcissistic, because even the good ones have that component to their personality.
Yeah, you have to be able to stand up in front of a crowd, win them over, and like doing it.
Yeah,
and that's
I understand that's part of the personality that's required to hold that job. I understand. That doesn't mean I have to have dinner with any of them. I don't.
Or to be a good pastor, frankly.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know?
That's true. I'm not trying to win anyone over here or get elected to anything myself, because power just isn't that important to me. But it bothers me a lot that the people that we're talking about and the people who are part of our political conversation are such douchebags. That sounds trite. And I don't mean it to sound trite. I don't want to be one of those podcasts that goes, oh, fuck everything. I just hate it. You know, you could listen to that 1 week and be done.
Well,
I want people, and maybe I'll leave this in and maybe I won't, but I want our listeners to get something out of this besides Mitch McConnell's a douchebag.
Yes, absolutely. First of all, he is a douchebag. Second of all, you remember this scene in Wonder Boys, which is an excellent movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
About writing and everything to do with writing. Go rent it right now. Mm-hmm. When finally, Robert Downey Jr. and Michael Douglas are in the back of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking, and he's just lost his novel, his very, 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 very big, rough draft, no copy novel.
Spoilers.
Yeah. That's
He's got a very long book, and for some reason he can't finish it or write it anymore. And it's lost, right?
And it's lost. And it's the only copy. And it's lost. And it's 100 times bigger than any book should be.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a lot of it when he was high. And so the guy in the front seat, who is a character that you would come to know, asks them what it was about. And Robert Downey Jr. tries to, well, you know, novel lives in the mind. You know, you can't really describe it. It's sort of a thing, you know, sort of agent bullshit. And the driver, Mr. Hardapple, which isn't really his name, but and you'll get that if you read the movie, asks, yeah, but how do you, why were you writing it? If you didn't know what it was, why were you writing it? And Michael Douglas answers, because I couldn't stop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And there's an awful lot of people like Mitch McConnell who can't stop.
Mm.
They
don't envision a life that's not where he is right now.
Well, this doesn't have people bowing and scraping and television cameras recording their every thought, and whoever they want on the face of the earth, they can get them on the phone, and they can go on any television show, any radio show, and have an audience all the time, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is that, and part of it is the fact that Mitch McConnell, we'll put this link up at the podcast, but go take a look at how incredibly influential the Koch brothers really are.
Oh my God.
How many different organizations, how many different, you know, webs, how many different concentric circles of organizations are owned by two unaccountable billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch McConnell doesn't work for the people of Kentucky. Mitch McConnell works for the Koch brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
He's an employee of the Koch brothers. And they're not hard to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Paradoxically, they have a very clear agenda, which is to destroy the U.S. government and let corporations do whatever they want to do.
Yep.
An aggressive, radical, libertarian.
Especially with
agenda.
The environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have nurtured for decades think tanks full of people who can give you argument after argument why the market should just be left alone, why poor people are morally defective, why voting rights should be difficult to get a hold of because it's a precious thing. We need to protect our voting rights, and why guns should be available for everyone. They're behind all of those things because that is their deeply held mnemonic, their mammon, the god they worship is corporate power, their personal ability to shape the world as they see fit. And their vision is big, it is horrid, it is lethal, and it is backed by billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Mitch McConnell does it. Because there's a coherent position from which he can argue. There's a coherent position from which Marco Rubio can argue that unemployed people are just, you know, lazy.
And big government solutions are not the answer. Yeah.
And so the reason they're douchebags.
I don't give Marco Rubio the same credit that I give Mitch McConnell for intelligence, because really, truly, Marco Rubio is missing some IQ points.
He's kind of an idiot. He's kind of a dumbass.
He's just, it really is easy to see when you hear him speak the lines that he's been fed.
Mm-hmm.
By people that are way smarter than he is. Now, maybe he's like a lot of my coworkers that used to depend on me to have all the information they needed to do their job.
Uh-huh.
Maybe he's smart enough to know who to ask to give him the talking points he needs. We don't need big government solutions. You know, he pushes all of the right buttons for the people that he is trying to placate and make like him.
And there's always a fallback position. If trapped, if caught, you know, in case of emergency, break glass and blame both sides.
Both sides of the aisle.
It's the universal fallback position for failed right-wing politicians.
He's very good at repeating those lines. Yes, he is.
And so in organizations that I've worked for, places I've consulted, places where I've been sort of, you know, in upper management even, my advice has always been figure out what your organization makes.
Mm-hmm.
It oftentimes doesn't make what you think it makes.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out the ecology, the ecosystem, and find the creatures that are the most well-fed and most powerful and most find the biggest predators in that ecosystem, and you will understand what your organization is.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest predators, the most successful creatures, the top of the food chain who are controlling our political discourse are douchebags, right-wing nut jobs, and centrists for a reason.
Yeah,
because the reward structure by people like the Kochs have set up make sure that those people get fed and they get whatever the fuck they want, and they get the house they want, the wife they want, the kids they want, the schools they want, access they want, whatever their fantasy is, they get to have their dreams come true as long as they go along with the program. And the left simply doesn't have that.
Yeah.
I hope one day we have instead of Pierre Omidyar buying, you know, creating his own media organization, or Jeff Bezos deciding to spend $250 million buying the Post.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping a benevolent left-wing billionaire will decide that we need a liberal infrastructure in this country to fight against the Koch brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we can have a fight between, you know, Vedic gods beating each other with bags of cash. But we're just outgunned when it comes to that. And the reason that they are in those positions is because someone wants them to be there.
Yeah.
And it is helpful to me. It clarifies my thinking when I look at just today, Chuck Todd.
Yeah.
Wanders onto television. And the whole topic is Mitch McConnell is holding hostage and what's going on. And I think he had like George Mitchell on talking about the good old days when people could get along. He and Bob Dole could get along. And it's, you know, Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid can't get along. And their relationship, he said, is in the toilet, which he then apologized for saying, because apparently that's a naughty word to say to George Mitchell. But his solution was, rather than, quote, figure out who's to blame, maybe they should both leave. Because that way nobody visits Chuck Todd in the night and cuts his balls off.
Mm-hmm.
That way we can just say, well, you know, let's not point fingers and figure out who's right or wrong, which is, you'll notice, is the sort of thing every criminal always says.
Yep, yep.
Let's not worry about who stole whose wallet and who ripped off whose car. Let's all just agree we're all sort of wrong and get on with our lives.
That's so Python-esque.
It is. Really, and it's true. It's absolutely true. Every time you hear someone arguing, let's not worry about who's to blame.
Yeah.
It's usually the bag man for the bad guy.
Yes, it is.
And it's Mark Halperin. And this is why David Gregory's plummeting ratings don't bother me, because he's never going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
He doesn't serve the great common weal. He doesn't serve the free press. He doesn't serve the Fourth Estate. He doesn't serve the First Amendment. He serves 500 to 1,000 very, very rich, influential people in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. As long as he's hand-jobbing those people and telling them what they want to hear, he's not going anywhere.
Yep.
And what is hilarious to see is...
It's the executive board of Northrop Grumman. That's who he works for.
Well, no, that Comcast now owns NBC, I believe.
But Northrop Grumman advertises on his show.
Mad. And what is hilarious, and hilarious in a horrifying sort of a comedy of the grotesque kind of way, go over to any site where David Gregory is being criticized, sort of a broad, you know, a Washington Post or a BuzzFeed or anything Politico, any place where David Gregory's future as anybody is being discussed. And you will see the comments section immediately fill up with wingnuts talking about the radical leftist, left-leaning commie David Gregory, who does nothing but carry water for the White House and the Kennedy usurper. And you realize how utterly lost these people are.
Mm-hmm.
And by lost, I mean dead loss. I mean, these people are a waste of carbon. They are the product of 30 years of selective breeding of stupid people, and I mean ideological breeding, to give the Koch brothers an army.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have an army. And now they can march into any election anywhere, almost in any red state, and elect anything. They can elect Caligula's horse.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter how crazy the election is or how droolingly psychotic the person is who they elect or what they say, because at the end of the day, every one of our objections, Blue Gal, will be met by Chuck Todd saying, well, maybe if both sides were to admit that they were both wrong and both compromise, you know, maybe we should just cut unemployment benefits a little bit and give up a little bit on Obamacare. And that way everybody wins. No, Chuck Todd, we all win when I walk into my local McDonald's and see you in a paper hat pushing apple pies. That's when I think I've won. But I'm not hopeless about it. I think the overall trend is these people are desperate. I mean, the pool they have to work from is shrinking, and it's not getting any bigger. Young viewers are fleeing like mad from Fox.
Yes. Yes, we noticed that this weekend. TV Newser, I think, had an article about not only are they just not watching, they're actively turning off.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that if I want my teenage son to go away and let me watch my sports, I just turn on Fox News for 5 minutes and he leaves the room.
and one clear sign that, first of all, how dangerous it is to eat your own dog food. When you're a conservative propagandist, once you start huffing, you know, putting your head in that plastic bag and huffing it, once you start believing your own bullshit, you're really screwed. And that happened this last week when Frank Luntz had a big old sad.
Yeah, very sad.
It was very, very sad because he doesn't know what happened to the right. This is full of crazy people and everyone's so vicious. let me be clear. Frank Luntz is the... I don't know how to describe him physically other than just – remember that the albino in A Princess Bride?
He is kind of that guy.
He's that guy. He's this sort of lump of right-wing conservative evil genius. And he's just an awful, slimy person. He conducts all the focus groups, all the dial groups. He's the one who refines the message. He's the one who comes up
with the one that writes up, yeah, what
talking points.
We're going to talk about big government. He's the one that that writes
up them.
The notebook that from which Marco Rubio reads.
Exactly. He's that guy.
It's originally in Frank Luntz's handwriting. It's probably boiled down more in some simple writing from Marco Rubio.
Some pop-up pictures, but
big bullet points. Point at the Kenyan faces on them.
Point at Obama and yell Kenyan. You know, that's what you do. But Frank Luntz has been around for a long time. He is the horrid propagandist of the right. He's the most effective one. He does all of his poll testing and focus grouping. He's the guy who does all the post-Fox audiences stuff. He's the guy. He was the ringleader of that infamous meeting on the day that Obama was.
He's the one that had the meeting. Yeah, the meeting. I mean, told everybody what to do.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to uniformly obstruct everything. Mm-hmm. Everything he tries to do, we're going to block. We're just going to cut him off at the legs. We're going to destroy his administration by simply not permitting him to govern in any way. He's that guy. Mm-hmm. 5 years later, he's all very sad because of partisanship is ruining this country because of both sides. And really, not so much both sides as Barack Obama. Barack Obama has ruined the electorate. Barack Obama refuses to cooperate. And he really can't stop regurgitating his own lies because that's all he eats anymore is his own poop. So all he has in his system is nothing but this toxic recycling system that he is like a microcosm of the entire GOP. But what that means is he can't figure out what's wrong, what's broken anymore. He can't fix it because he's the problem. And all he can figure out is that the Obama message of entitlement and redistribution has gotten into the groundwater somehow and poisoned the electorate. So now he's blaming the public. And he's just sort of throwing this public tantrum about how he can't control the monster anymore. It's now running amok and people aren't listening to Frank Luntz anymore. And what this reminds me of, this is why conservatives truly hate liberals. Not because of our economic policy or our positions on pot or gay marriage or guns or anything like that. Because those are all pretty mainstream these days, in case you haven't noticed.
Yeah.
They hate us because we remember things. We willfully and with malice aforethought refuse to forget the 90s.
Yeah.
So when Frank Luntz throws his fucking tantrum over how the public has let the country down because they're not willing to get indignant enough about what an awful person Barack Obama is, remember Bill Bennett writing his public tirade about the end of outrage because the public wouldn't get on board with impeaching Bill Clinton?
Yes.
It's the same fucking playbook over and over and over and over again. And we recognize it. And Frank Luntz doesn't. Frank Luntz let himself lobotomize himself. And now he's helpless because he has no concept of why it doesn't work. And it doesn't work because, as we saw on South Park last night, the level of urine saturation in the pool has reached a toxic level.
It has. It's causing an overflow.
It's going to cause a terrible chain reaction, you know?
Chain reaction, yes.
And the problem, Frank Luntz, is you're the source of all that urine. You've been peeing in the pool. And now it's reached the point where if even one more drop is added, it's all going to blow up. Yeah. And so Frank Luntz now sits in his giant apartment eating by himself, bitching about how nobody listens to Frank Luntz anymore and how American people refuse to go along with his program. And isn't that very sad? Why is that? Why do they, and of course, who he blames is Barack Obama. And so having been through this rodeo two or three times already, I know how it ends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when you step back and look at the overall arc of history, you can fault Obama for a lot of things, but we sort of have health care now.
Yeah.
Even though we're getting pistol whipped, even though it's a terrible, awful compromise, it's better than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the new head of the Consumer Protection Agency.
Yeah, he was on.
Richard Cordray was on. Yeah,
Rob Cordray? No, not Rob Cordray. Rick Cordray. Yeah.
Was on. There is such an agency now. It's being run by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who got kicked out of that job is now in the U.S. Senate.
Yeah.
So, you know, I take...
There is progress. And I want to say, too, there's progress culturally, too. I think culturally we are getting to a much better place than we were during the Bush administration.
Yeah.
folk music is making a comeback. Did you notice that? Have you noticed that?
I have a real problem with that. I never had an ear for it. I never liked it. You throw an electric guitar under. I appreciate the roots of it. I appreciate where it comes from. It's not mine. It's like skiffle. It's something that, you know, this group of people did, and there's a whole bunch of people who did it, and they all enjoy it, and I can observe them from a distance enjoying it. I get that they're enjoying it. It doesn't come onto my palate the way it does theirs. So
we're living in a golden age of television.
We are. We truly are.
Uh-huh. And we're starting to live in a golden age of the what I call the neo 19th century novel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I just finished reading.
You've been cranking on books.
I've been cranking on books. I just finished reading Elizabeth Gilbert's The Signature of All Things, which is written. I've read a few paragraphs to you in bed. Absolutely written like Jane Eyre and all of those Jane Austen books. It's written in a way that her sensibility is so tied to the 19th century. It takes place in the 19th century, but I used to say in college, I used to paraphrase Eisenhower. He used to say, if you can't say it in one page, it's not worth saying. And I used to say, yeah, if you can't say it in 871 pages, it's not worth saying. And there's another new book that I want to read called The Luminaries, which won the Man Booker Prize, that is apparently the same thing. It takes place in 1866, and it's 800 pages long, and it's beautiful. It's this woman's first novel, you know, and it's apparently just fantastic. So, you know, things are happening that are unfolding for good, I think, personally. I apologize for bringing up folk music. I didn't mean to cause you any pain.
No, it didn't hurt me. I'm still reeling from the fact that David Brooks talked to kids about pot.
Yeah, and pot. And then I thought even more so his more recent column about hotels was really offensive.
Yeah.
You know, everyone kind of pointed out David Brooks and pot and, you know, the fact that his white privilege protected him from any bad results from him smoking pot in high school.
Well, and let me be clear. He wrote this really, really white privileged, clueless, gated community article about what happened when he smoked pot when he was a kid.
Yeah.
And how, you know, we should... And how we should keep it maybe illegal, but I'm not really sure about that, but we shouldn't encourage it. And just really condescending and stupid. Mm-hmm. It was just stupid. Yeah. It was so unaware, so clearly oblivious to what the criminal justice system does to people, like Bill O'Reilly. And the thing is, this is a guy who brags about every paragraph in every one of his columns represents a pile of research that he's done. That he wrote an article, said, this is how I write, basically. I have piles and piles of research that I do for every paragraph. And every paragraph you see in every one of my columns represents a literal, physical, in my home, a pile of research I have done. Clearly, he has done nothing. And clearly, that's just not true.
Yeah.
Because the amount of bullshit he believes about everything is just staggering. But it wasn't just that he wrote this incredible, jaw-droppingly stupid column about pot. It was that the next day or two, when he has had a chance to reel from the blowback from it, he goes on PBS and says essentially the same thing.
Yeah.
Because David Brooks doesn't listen to anybody. He doesn't listen to critics. He doesn't read his comment section. He doesn't read his email. He doesn't listen to anybody except his little coterie of privileged friends. And then on Sunday, David Gregory does what David Gregory does.
Reads
read
David
aloud.
Brooks' column to him.
Yes, no, not to him. He wasn't there. But there's some contractual obligation they have where I swear I think that's it's actually in writing someplace that David Gregory is required to read David Brooks'
column
aloud
on the air
once a month or so.
God.
And then comes this atrocious article about the joys of boutique hotels, which is
this was really offensive to me because it was all about someone with disposable income during the week when we're talking about unemployment insurance and extending
Right.
He decides to write about how people don't want to buy stuff anymore. You know, stuff is just kind of stuff.
They want to buy experiences.
And for $200 extra a month, night, you can have a hotel experience instead of just sleeping on a bed. $200 is what you bring home in a week.
Yeah.
$200 is 2/3 of what the average unemployment check is.
Yes. Every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
$300 every 2 weeks.
And
it just makes me want to hurl. The timing of this was horrible. he is, like you say, completely ensconced in this bubble that nothing, reality does not touch him in any way. Financial reality, social reality.
History, causality,
none of it.
Politics,
yeah.
Being wrong. And the thing
he doesn't get fired for writing something so craven.
Well,
first of all, it's, 100 degrees below zero in most of the country, and people don't have money for heat. Barack Obama brought a woman onto the stage who has two children in the military, and she's putting a coat on in her house.
Because she can't turn
the
heat up.
No money left.
Yeah. Well, and writing a Condé Nast review of high-end hotels is fine. It is hilarious that it came the same week when the New York Times announced that it was going to become BuzzFeed.
Yeah.
That it was going to have a special, they don't make enough money. Apparently the family doesn't make enough money. So now they're going to have to do sponsored content, which basically means infusing your ad people into your writing area. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be really careful about it. But this whole separation between the writing ad copy to sell shit and writing opinions and news pieces that are supposed to be pristine and untouched by commercial influence is gone. And the fact that these two things happened in the same week was just hilarious to me. It was also really creepy because there were no humans at all in the column except for hotel owners. There were types of people. The sort of consumer who does this and the sort of person who does that and the sort of person who trades as an information economy educated who can trade their education for money. There wasn't Bob. There wasn't Sue. And I really sat down and said, any writer who's anywhere near decent at all can write a good column sitting in a hotel lobby talking to people. Go to the hotel bar and talk to people. Mike Royko built half his career talking about the real and imaginary denizens of Chicago bars. And he was a really good writer. David Brooks could have actually gone interacted with a human being in a hotel bar or even one of the upscale yuppie human beings who is there because they need a special case for their iPad or whatever joke he was making.
Whatever it is, yeah.
But
yeah.
He didn't interact with a living soul. He just sat like a creepy old man in the corner observing the paintings on the wall and the sofas and the types of people who flowed through his vision and wrote about it. And that was it. Mm-hmm. And the thing I would like to add, just to button this one up, the thing that really infuriated me about his pot column was the fact that he blew an English assignment when he was a kid because he got high. Because he got high. And it haunts him.
Well, he's huffing something now, that's for sure.
And it haunts him to this day.
Yeah.
First of all, if you're dumb enough to get stoned before an English assignment, you deserve what you get. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you're the guy who got the Iraq war wrong.
Yep.
And you've never mentioned that haunts you in any way or even mentioned it at all. Other than to say it's a real shame that the Bush administration didn't administer it correctly. But you've never spoken about being haunted by – and mind you, I'm a guy who's read almost everything David Brooks has written. David Brooks has never mentioned anything in his past that bothers him or that he got wrong or that he fucked up or that he got in error ever, even though pretty much his entire history is a history of being wrong about everything. Mm-hmm. The only time he has mentioned being haunted is something that happened to him in fucking sophomore English class.
Yeah. Yeah.
That now influences his ideas on marijuana policy. That is someone who is, but again, let me loop this back. He is oblivious. He's out of touch. He is living in an adamantine bubble protecting him from normal humans. But he has this really influential job. Mm-hmm. And the reason he has that job is because somebody wants him to have it. As we're letting journalists go, as newspapers are struggling for ad revenue, as...
So whose dead hooker does he have in the trunk of his car?
Exactly. Who does he and David Gregory so sexually satisfy that they're never going to be held to account? And that's what fascinates me. Again, just like the Chris Christie thing, it's you can infer so much about the interior workings of our media by watching who they produce and who they put out to the public as these are our very serious people. Well, they're idiots who are mouthing things that are obviously not true, and there's no consequence to it. if you're a kid smoking pot, if you're a black kid smoking pot, there are definite consequences to it. But lying about the Iraq war, backing crackpot plans, making bullshit predictions, contradicting your own writing every other month, no consequences at all, except a nice big fat paycheck every month that you can rely on for the rest of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is what that view of how things work, I find deeply interesting. Because it tells you so much about who really runs things and what their real agenda is and where to attack them, where to go after them. It is pointless to go after Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
As I've said before, debating conservatives is ridiculous because conservatives don't understand what conservatism means and they don't understand what debating means.
Well, and I had to send a tweet to Cory Booker this week because he was calmly every 20 minutes or so tweeting a fact about unemployment insurance.
Yes.
That would argue in favor of, you know, extending unemployment insurance, that 40% of unemployment insurance goes to households with children in them.
Yeah.
And on. And I wasn't the only one who sent him a tweet saying, dude, you know, honey, you're acting as though these people can be reasoned with, that the people that might vote against you actually care about fact.
Yeah, and they're going to slap their head and go, oh, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. Children?
I never
really
realized.
Oh, I don't want to hurt children. Let me rethink this.
Yeah.
No, that's not going to happen.
You're mistaking them for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so, Mitch, in fact, look what happened. Mitch McConnell decided to hold Obamacare hostage.
Mm-hmm.
He thought it would be good to stand up in front of a microphone and say, let's delay giving health insurance to people so that we can give them unemployment instead.
Right.
Let's do that. That's fair.
Which two Democratic constituencies can we pit against each other?
Yeah.
And make them fight for our amusement?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey,
I have a statement to make to sum up this podcast.
To America?
Yeah, I'd like to make a statement to America.
Please do. Please do. You have the floor.
As a mother and a patriot, I'm sick of wearing L.L. Bean while perjuring myself just to get a damn fishing license. I miss my St. John suits and Fox News makeup department, damn it. And besides, I'm stepping down for the children.
For the children.
For the children.
Who are you talking about there, Blue Gal?
I'm channeling my inner Liz Cheney.
Yeah, yeah.
I think every woman who listens to this podcast should start a sentence this week with, as a mother and a patriot. Children, as a mother and a patriot, I would like you to turn off the television and get ready for bed.
And try that next time you go to the Department of Human Services.
There you go. Son of a bitch. You made me laugh. I wasn't supposed to laugh about that.
I'm sorry.
As a mother and a patriot, I would like to have health insurance that lasts more than 1 month at a time.
As a mother and a patriot, hand me the goddamn remote. As a mother and a patriot, turn on the goddamn Downton Abbey and shut the hell up.
Everybody shut up. Downton Abbey is on. And as a mother and a patriot, I get to watch this undisturbed.
Where's mom? All right. Who? Where's mom?
Your mother and patriot?
You mean your mother and that patriot?
Yeah. All right. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Simba. And like the governor of New Jersey, Simba has allegedly destroyed at least one set of curtains, but pleads the fifth.
Uh-huh.
You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. And we do love hearing from you. Thank you to everyone who donates to our podcast. You guys are awesome.
Yar.
Feel free to write us. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. And by the way, Monday morning when it was 13 degrees below zero,
and much lower wind chill.
And much lower wind chill. We got mail.
We got mail from our letter carrier.
From our letter carrier. God bless him.
He's out there. Rain, sleet, snow, or hail.
So, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Blue Gal, on the advice of counsel, the internet kitties are invoking their Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license. Copyright 2014. Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.